and welcome to Addressing Alaskans, a program capturing community conversations in South Central Alaska. Join us each week on KSKA Anchorage and travel to different spots throughout our community and listen to local groups gathered to discuss what matters to Alaskans.
This week, U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski. Hear Murkowski talk about gridlock in the Senate, declining oil production in Alaska, and reshaping the VA. This address was hosted by the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce and was recorded August 18th at the Dena'ina Civic and Convention Center. Outgoing Chamber of Commerce Board Chair Bob Heinrich starts us off. We apologize for the loud hum present throughout the audio.
Now on to today's topic and presentation. Today we'll hear about the critical issues that appear on tomorrow's primary election ballot and the big election that's coming November 4th. Senator Murkowski will give us an update on what's happening in Washington, D.C., you know, the things that affect us some 3,000 plus miles away. After the presentation, we will have a microphone available for you to ask questions directly of any of the three individuals here. Please raise your hand high and a staff member will bring that microphone to you. We'll get through as many as we can trying to meet our 1 o'clock deadline. I'd like to now introduce U.S. Senator Murkowski. Senator Lisa Murkowski was the first Alaska-born senator and only the sixth United States senator to serve the state. The state's senior senators, Lisa Murkowski is a third-generation Alaskan, born in Ketchikan and raised in towns across the state. Since joining the Senate in 2002, Senator Murkowski has been a strong advocate for Alaska on the important issues facing the state, including energy, health care, education, military and veterans affairs, and protecting the rights of our first people. Lisa's the top Republican on the Energy and Natural Resources Committee, and also the top Republican on the Interior Appropriations Committee, two committees with an enormous impact to the state of Alaska. If the Senate switches to a Republican body this fall, she'll hold the gavel in both of those committees in the next Congress. Senator Murkowski has been instrumental in advancing America's Arctic agenda in Washington, educating lawmakers that Alaska is the nation's gateway to the Arctic nation status, and pressuring the administration and the previous one to invest more in the region. Ladies and gentlemen, our U.S. Senator, Lisa Murkowski.
Thank you, Bob. Good to be with you all this afternoon. I have to tell you, Max, listening to your drive, your ambition, one guy making good things happen, it's just a reminder to me of just kind of that independent entrepreneurial spirit that you see here in Alaska. And it was great as you all went around the room introducing yourself and your affiliation. It's good to be with people who are making things happen in our community, in our state. You're putting people to work. You're working hard, and you clearly have a presence, not only a presence here at the chamber today, but truly a presence in the greatest city, in the greatest state, in the greatest country, and it should make you all proud about what you do. So just delighted to be home with you. I do want to talk a little bit about kind of the politics of the day. Last week, I understand that the chamber hosted perhaps a more entertaining panel of speakers than just myself here when you had the Republican candidates for Senate before you. And I want to talk a little bit about the primary, answer any questions that you might have, as Bob had said. But I want to give you a quick update about where we are in Washington, D.C., what's happening there. As far as work within the Senate goes, I have to be very blunt, very honest with you. There's not a whole lot going on right now. We're about halfway through this August recess period. This is the time where we get out of the heat, we get out of the humidity, we get out of the gridlock, and we come home. Now, I don't know about everybody. I had kids that are now grown, but my idea of what recess is was changed dramatically between what I saw with my kids and where we are now. Recess in the United States Senate is the time where I'm back in the state, visiting with people around the state, but I'm working pretty dang hard and quite honestly very happy to do so. To be home in the state for a month plus, to be on the same time zone for over a month is just pure happiness. But it's a chance for me to really get out in the community, it's a chance to to not only talk to people, giving them updates, but really to get that feedback back from them. I had a chance to bring some folks to the state that gives us an opportunity to explain who we are to others. I was in Fairbanks and out in Chino with the Secretary of Energy yesterday, spent the full day with him. More importantly, my husband was able to take him out fishing. And you want to get some one-on-one time with the Secretary of the Interior. We had some local Alaskans down there on the river that really, I think, helped to educate him in a way that was very, very beneficial. We have had the Commandant of the Coast Guard up last week, and I was with him down in Ketchikan over in Kodiak. Again, an opportunity for him as the incoming Commandant to really understand Alaska's position as an Arctic nation, the role of the Coast Guard, and really how that all intersects. So in this month, in this 5-6 week period, I'm on tap to be in about 20 different communities around the state. I'm going to end up in White Horse as I'm the U.S. representative on the Arctic Parliamentarian Conference, so I'll be there. But in the meantime, I'm everywhere from Ketchikan to Emonik, and loving every minute of it. But then the question is, okay, well, you go back in September, mid-September, what are y'all going to do? And I wish that I could tell you with some degree of optimism that, by gosh, we got a whole bunch of things that we're going to power through. I'm not optimistic as to that right now. We did have kind of this spurt of productivity in late July. We passed legislation to reform the Veterans Administration. I think that that was a good first step, but I don't think that any of us should kid ourselves that we have fixed the VA. The system, as we know it around the country, needs work. So just making sure that our veterans don't wait in long lines is not the end-all and be-all of a fix to the VA. We were able to patch the Highway Trust Fund for 10 months. That's important to us here in this state. It's important all across the country. We were able to get a flood insurance measure passed into law, workforce investment, a measure that we've been working on for over 8 years. You would think at a time of a slow economy, we'd be able to move something like workforce investment, something that we all agree on. But it's been tough in Washington right now, just tough. And in terms of what we may have in front of us this next month, it's unclear as of yet what we will be taking up. There's plenty of issues that are pressing right now that certainly would merit that. Got to deal with a still weak economy. Of course, the debt that just continues to climb abroad. We have seen the disintegration, in my view, of this administration's just a bewildering foreign policy. I don't get it, and I'm not convinced that they get it. But what I do know is that other nations around the world are looking at us and saying, America, where'd you go? Where's your leadership here? And then we have our own issues within our own borders on the southern border. It is desperately in need of attention. Here in Alaska, we know the onslaught of regulatory issues that continue to impose burdens on our families, on our businesses. So we could go back to work on a jobs bill or tax or regulatory reform, which we absolutely must do, focus on spending cuts, border security, energy policy, which we haven't really worked to advance in half a decade here, really. There's appropriations bills that we need to be moving forward. But if I had to tell you with any degree of confidence where I think the Senate goes in September, it's we're going to continue to process more judges. And well, in the meantime, what happens with these other issues that need to be addressed? So this is disappointing. And you read a lot about how the House is the dysfunctional body. I wish that I could tell you that the Senate was a bright example of productivity, but that is not our case. And I want to explain to you just real briefly why I believe we've seen this breakdown. I've been back there representing you now for over a dozen years. I have seen the change, the transition from when I came in 2002 to where we are now. And what we have had is just a process that has been ground down. We have been effectively in a legislative lockdown. And this is in part due to the fact that we're not following our own internal process within the United States Senate. The committee process, where you take a good idea, you put it in legislation, you shop around for sponsors, you take it before the committees of jurisdiction. You have good debate, you put amendments forward, you discuss it, you move it through the committee. It then goes to the floor. Again, you do the same process. You move amendments, you have debate, and then you vote on it. But what has happened is the committee process has been largely ignored, completely bypassed, so that what happens is bills are being created in the majority leader's office. He's got a good team of legislative staff, apparently. But what that means is that a bill then comes directly to the floor of the United States Senate, directly to the floor, bypasses all committees, which means it bypassed the amendment process, which means it bypassed the coalition of good ideas that folks have on both sides. And then what happens when it comes to the floor, we've got a majority leader that has a pretty specific agenda. He is, in my view, set to implement the Obama administration's agenda. He knows what he wants to do. He puts it on the floor, and then we go into this arcane process called filling the tree. What on God's green earth does that mean? It means that only the majority leader can allow for amendments. In other words, there are no amendments allowed. So picture this. You have an immigration bill, pretty weighty. You have take whatever your reform bill is. It's not gone through committee. There's been no amendments. The leader puts it on the floor. There is no amendment process allowed. And he says, okay, we're going to move to cloture, once again, using language that most people in America don't know and don't really care about. But do you want to take the bill up or not? Well, what would you do if you were in the minority party? You'd say, whoa, wait a minute. Where was the opportunity for input here? And so you vote against it, and then you're labeled obstructionist. You won't let the bill go to the floor. It is a crazy, crazy, broken down process. A perfect example. I had introduced a bill that I'd been working on for a couple years. It's called the Bipartisan Sportsmen's Act. Wow. Allows for greater access to hunting and fishing. There's conservation measures in it. Pretty decent bill. Teamed up with the senator from North Carolina to introduce it. We had a total of 46 co-sponsors when we started the debate, equally divided between R's and D's. It's almost impossible for a bill like this to fail. All we were asking for, on both sides, mind you, was that we allow for some input from other members who weren't there to help format this bill that we had done, because it hadn't gone through the committee. We had drafted it up, and then the majority leader, quote, rule for it, he moved it to the floor, bypassing the committee. So nobody except me and the senator from North Carolina had opportunity for input. Well, I've got a colleague from Wyoming who says, hey, it's really important when somebody wants to take their bow through Yellowstone that they not have to fly it over. You want to be able to transport it through a national park. That was going to require an amendment. Can't do it. Leader moved to shut off the debate. His party supported him, and it sealed the fate of the bill. We never got to it. And what is interesting, and what people fail to understand, is this is not just Republicans being denied an opportunity to weigh in. This is folks on both sides. Between July of last year, 2013, and July of this year, 14 15 Republican amendments were allowed to be offered on anything that had come before the United States Senate the previous year. 14 Republican amendments. But our Democrat colleagues didn't really fare much better. They were only offered an opportunity for 9 amendments. It's so bad that you have members of the majority party, Democrats, who have never been allowed to offer an amendment on any bills that come before us. What kind of a crazy process? I mean, we're supposed to be the greatest deliberative body in the world. We're supposed to debate bills, we're supposed to work it through the process, we're supposed to vote on ideas that are offered by both parties rather than just shutting things down. And what you've seen translate is a process that has effectively ground to a halt. And this strategy hurts our state. This hurts Alaska. And think about it just in the energy context, where we are today versus where we were 6 years ago. More than half of the National Petroleum Reserve is now closed to development. And where development is technically allowed, we have seen the administration work to prevent roads and bridges from being built. The administration's plan for the coastal plain does not include a single alternative that allows for oil and gas development. I think their goal is to simply convert it all to wilderness, to lock it up permanently. We now face significant uncertainty for oil and gas development in the Arctic. We have different listings, critical habitat designation under the Endangered Species Act, that can really pile on and add to continued havoc there. You know, we talk a lot about what's going on in foreign policies and sanctions on Iran. Think about the sanctions that are on a resource state like Alaska. I mean, it's tough. And I get up every day to push back on it. In fact, that's really what does get me up, whether it's fighting for a one-lane gravel non-commercial use road in King Cove so that they can access the second longest runway in the state of Alaska, because it really is a matter of life and death for the local residents. I'm in constant contact, which usually means constant battle with the administration on CD5. We've got Greater Moose's Tooth. We've got, again, the Arctic. We've got the Tongass. All of these other areas where our resource opportunities are blocked and where we're seeing regulations continue to build and compound the problem. I've introduced a couple bills now to open up the Arctic coastal plain. I'm working to secure revenue sharing for offshore production. We've introduced legislation just this past month to stop the president from unilaterally designating new national monuments. So we're working to make these good things happen. But here's the problem. If you don't have a legislative process where these bills can be considered, whether they're offered as amendments or whether and then voted on, or where you have a process, it's pretty tough to make any significant progress right now, and that's why I'm disappointed with where the Senate is as an institution, how it's being run, and really with the people who are choosing to run it that way. Because the rules haven't changed. It's how the leadership is choosing to muscle the rules. And that's where Harry Reid has taken it. And I don't like to get necessarily personal, but we have a majority leader who has taken a different approach than in any other time. I listened to the names being announced around the room. Many of you have been around for a long time. You saw how the Congress would work, whether it was Ted Stevens as chairman of appropriations or Dan Inouye as chairman of appropriations, whether we had a Republican majority or a Democrat majority. And we would argue and fight and bicker, but we would move legislation for the good of the country. And yet, we're at a situation right now where the minority has the deck stacked against us. And I'm willing to work with anybody out there, but you got to go both ways on this. And this is where I want to talk just a second, and then we'll move to questions here. But this is why tomorrow's election is so crucial. Don't ask me about who I'm going to vote for in the primary, because I'm all I can tell you is that I'm pretty happy that I'm not running in it. But I have a couple good friends who are, and I think that that either Dan or me, they'd make a good senator for our state. And out of respect for them, I'm going to say no more and consider the arguments that are out there. But I do want to talk about one thing that is on the ballot tomorrow, and that is ballot measure one. This is a different case, because I do have a lot to say about this one, starting with my very strong and direct encouragement that you vote no on it. I've seen some buttons out there, and I think in this chamber crowd, we clearly do have that support, but we should not take anything for granted with this measure tomorrow. In looking at our history under ACEs, everything happening with our oil production in this country and what we've seen under tax reform so far, I believe pretty strongly that no is the right choice. And I know that this is controversial. I mean, we see it, we've spent the Alaska Dispatch, what a great way to really get your start. You've gotten more advertising from what has gone back and forth between yes and no on this. But there's some facts, I think, that are not in dispute here. We know what has happened with our oil production in this state, the decline at 6% a year, even as these other states, whether it's North Dakota or Texas, even California, they're increasing their production, and there's no denying that. And there's no denying that TAPS is at a level that is about a third full. There's no denying that Alaska has fallen to fourth in the state production rankings. And our real difficulty here is we don't have a lot of the state lands to turn to. We're looking at federal lands that are closed to production. And so what we need to find are these incremental opportunities from our state lands. And we've got to do that in a very different landscape. It's no longer enough to have the resources in the ground. These new technologies, these new techniques that are out there, they've changed the game. I was in North Dakota, not this past summer, but the summer before, with Senator Hoeven, and we were going through the man camps there in North Dakota, in Williston, North Dakota. And we're walking through, and we're in the dining hall, and I'm hearing all these people, hey, that's Lisa, hey, Lisa, over here. And I'm kind of hobnobbing and greeting everybody. And finally, Hoeven looks at me, and he says, this is my state. How come all these people know you? Nobody's called me out. And I said, that's my problem. I want all these Alaskans who are here in North Dakota, I want them back home. This does not make me happy to see my friends there. So it's important that we see new production. It's important that we have these jobs here and bring these folks back home. So the governor, the legislature, they knew they had to act, and I believe that they were right to do so. We've got to be competitive here, and I think that we're beginning to see some of the outcomes from SB 21 in helping to make it a more attractive place. We've seen more than $8 billion in new projects announced from both the majors and the independents. We're seeing more rigs, more exploration, more contracts being signed. Shops are busy, people are working, and I think that's good. We're seeing some of the publications, you know, Alaska Journal of Commerce had some headlines like production exceeds revenue forecast. They had another one, slope drilling reached record levels in 2014. So I'm looking at where we are right now as a state, as a resource rich and production state. I want to believe that this tax reform can work. I think we all recognize that there is no overnight solution here, but I think we can start by voting no on one tomorrow. With that, I know we've got a lot of folks in the room that would love to ask questions, happy to respond to anything that might be on your mind, but just know that I'm delighted to be home with all of you. Thanks so much for the opportunity.
Thank you, Senator. And now it is time for questions from the audience. If you'd raise your hand high, there will be a microphone brought to you by someone in staff. Marianne, we'll start with you. Thanks for kicking us off.
Senator, first of all, thank you so much for all that you do for the state of Alaska. We appreciate you on a daily basis and much more. In terms of the treatment of Alaska, different from the lower 48, in terms of LNG export, can you please talk about some of the good fights that you are fighting to ensure that Alaska truly is treated differently than kind of all of those projects that are waiting out there in the lower 48? Thank you.
Well, thank you, Marianne, and I appreciate your leadership and what you are trying to do as we try to advance Alaska's energy opportunities here. I had a good conversation, many conversations with Secretary Moniz this weekend. We had a lot of discussion about what is happening with LNG export in the country, what is happening with those applications that are seeking to export, and how that process may work. They have rearranged those applications within the queue to allow for things to speed up. And that's good, that's important. But to your direct point, Marianne, is Alaska in the queue along with everybody else, or are we recognized as a different market, a different opportunity for export? And what was gratifying was to hear him state absolutely unequivocally that Alaska's gas is a different process. It's being viewed differently than anything in the lower 48. Our market, we recognize here, is not competing, our gas is not competing with the gas in the lower 48. And so the allowance to be considered separately when we look to export our natural gas is clearly recognized. And I pressed him further. I said, I appreciate you saying it, but you're not going to be Secretary of Energy forever. You got another 2.5 years, a little over 2.5 years in this administration. What assurance do you think that we have as Alaskans that the next administration will recognize that? And he said, based on the conversations that he has had, he sees no scenario where Alaska's gas is basically lumped in with lower 48 gas. So I thought that was a good, strong assurance. And I encouraged him to make sure that they repeated that loud and clear wherever they went.
Next question.
I can't believe we don't have any questions.
My name is Henry Mitchell. I work for Coastal Villages. The Magnuson Act is going to be up for reauthorization. And, from my perspective, having served on the council many years ago, Alaska has sort of been shortchanged in terms of the allocation of resources that are actually available to Alaskans. What steps could you take to ensure that more of the resource off our shores is actually utilized for the benefit of our coastal communities in Alaska?
Well, Henry, you as well as anybody knows some of the difficult history and how we got to where we are with allocations. It is always difficult and complicated, but again, we're going to have an opportunity with Magnuson Stevens and the reauthorization coming up to look at allocation issues. This is something where you have folks on both sides, some saying, well, we might not think that the allocations as they currently exist are the best. We're fearful that if we go into this fight, we lose out to the lower 48 interests. That's not gonna help if Washington gets more. And we look really critically at, do we lose more if we try to basically open up the box? This is an issue that we as Alaskans not only need to weigh in, but we need to weigh in a way that is as unified as possible. And I know that with Coastal Villages specifically, there is a real concern that given the larger population base, that the allocations have not been fairly rendered throughout these past decades here. How we address that without eroding what it is that we have is our greatest challenge. So I have urged a level of cooperation and real communication on this, because I think if we're split, we run a risk of losing so much of what we have fought for. I think we recognize in this state there have been some things that are looked, programs that are looked on by folks on the outside as, you know, that's a system that we don't know much about it, whether it's bypass mail, whether it's essential air, whether it's the CDQ program, and it seems kind of like a special thing for Alaska, and maybe Alaska doesn't need to be special anymore. Well, we are special in many, many ways. Know that your delegation will continue to fight for these. But this is a challenge that we have, and those that were from the Denali Commission here know exactly what I'm talking about. Many of our programs that were put in place when Senator Stevens was in office are under attack. I don't want to lose what we've been able to build with CDQ, with Denali Commission, what bypass. So we're going to work on this. Need your help.
All right, we've got time for one more question.
I just had a quick question. You had mentioned the problems with the VA system, and I'm just curious. I'm in my office 70 hours a week, so I never get to see the mail, the news. So I'm just curious where we are as far as that goes, where the fix is, what needs to be done, what has been done. As a physician, I don't at this point have the ability to see VA patients. I want to see VA patients. I'm working on right now trying to get on the right insurances to be able to do that, which is a nightmare, don't even ask. But I just wanted to kind of find out where we were with the fix, where it's at, and what potential, I guess, opportunities too for, you know, private physicians like myself to help out with treating those patients are there. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense, and let me start by thanking you as a physician and a provider here in this state. I'm not sure what your area of specialty is, but we just thank you for it because we need more, whatever it is. As far as what we have done with the VA reform, in an effort to reduce wait times and get our veterans in to see providers, we have effectively adopted a system that will allow a veteran to go outside the VA for care if they are unable to get an appointment within 30 days, or if they are within a certain number of miles away, 45 miles away from a VA facility. Well, in Alaska, that's pretty much everywhere. But it is not unlimited in terms of who you may see. There are three areas that are there as an opportunity. If you accept Medicare, then the veteran could go to your clinic, your facility, he could see you. If you are a federally qualified health center, the veteran could go to the federally qualified health center in his or her area. Or if there is an IHS facility, whether it's South Central or if you're up in Nome, out in the valley, you would have the opportunity to receive services there. That's something that Alaska has really pioneered and led. We have been working to try to reduce to bring down the silos, if you will, between the agencies. So a native veteran can get care in Bethel without having to come into the VA clinic here. We've been doing that for years, and it's something that I've been working on. Ted Stevens and I started it, you know, 8-9 years ago, and we are now at that point where it really is getting to be somewhat seamless, and it's good. We've led the way there, and I think that was a good model for others in the country to see. And when I said that the reforms are not perfect, that it's a first step, one of the concerns that I have is, okay, you're a veteran, you've been used to having all your care coordinated at the VA. Now you're gonna go see one doc for your heart and another doc for your diabetes, and you've got somebody else that you're seeing from a behavioral health specialist, who's coordinating that care? Who's managing that care? Does this all come back to the VA and the VA knows what's going on? Right now, you probably know, this electronic medical records, it sounds fabulous. Tell me anybody who thinks it's really working right now. So I'm concerned that in an effort to give a quick fix and say, veteran, you do not have to wait for your care, we may be sacrificing some of the coordinated effort that I think we've built through our VA system. And I'm fearful that we're going to lose ground on that. So we're monitoring this very, very carefully. But again, thank you for the care that you provide for others.
Senator Murkowski, thank you again.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Addressing Alaskans with U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski. This talk was hosted by the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce and was recorded August 18th at the Denina Civic and Convention Center. Thank you for tuning in with us today on Addressing Alaskans. I'm your host and producer, Monica Goki.
Addressing Alaskans is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Theme music is by Patrick Lee. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. To let us know about an upcoming community event that you would like to hear on Addressing Alaskans, just go to our website at alaskapublic.org and click on Contact Us at the bottom of the page. Learn more about Addressing Alaskans and listen online at alaskapublic.org.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.